The man behind the desk of the guard office looked up as the guard, Kai, Bia, Martin, Jim, and the puppy came through the door.
What's this, Mally?
Unlicensed animal. Claim they found it in a trash bin. But it seems to know him.
The guard jerked a thumb at Jim, who still cradled the puppy along his forearm. It looked asleep.
Fines, 200 credits a day. Crate license, 50 credits. Out of crate license, 100 credits. Both require a health certificate available from any on-station veterinarian, and you can look them up in the business directory using a public access comm line. Or if it's not your animal, or you wish it destroyed, that will be 200 credits fine. 10 credits disposal fee, payable immediately by cash or approved credit line only.
The desk looked up.
Name, ship name, names of all persons who have contacted this, whatever it is.
Jim Hackersar, from Gary Tobai. And I'm the one who found it in the trash container. He was crying and trying to get out.
The clerk looked at Bia.
And you are?
Bia Chalk, same ship.
Gordon Martin, same ship.
Captain Vada, Gary Tobai.
You're armed, Mally says. Your permit number?
Kai handed the permit over.
Huh. Not in the database. What's the date on this? Oh, today. I guess you won't have any trouble paying the fines for your pet then, will you? Shopping at Blades. Though, if it's really not yours, you'd be smart to let us get rid of it.
No! You can't let them kill a puppy!
What do we need with a puppy?
Jim gave her a stricken look.
Dogs can be useful. Dockside, I mean. This one's very small.
Well, he's a puppy. He'll grow. I bet he'll be fierce. He won't be much trouble.
Kai looked at Bia in surprise. She hadn't known he had any interest in animals.
Up to you. There's also the mandatory decontamination and observation period for personnel in contact with an unlicensed animal lacking health papers. You can locate the nearest clinic in the business directory using any public access comm link.
The puppy opened one limpid eye, squirmed, and piddled down Jim's front. An astonishing amount of money later, Kai looked at her protectors with less than favor.
You two made enough commotion that any enemy we might have now knows where we are, what we're wearing, and that I'm armed. Next time, just smash a window and start screaming obscenities, why don't you?
All right, but how do I know when?
Kai appealed to deities she'd heard of and didn't believe in. The puppy, now listed as Puddles in the vet's database, was being inspected, disinfected, and would be delivered the next day. The vet had informed her that it was almost certainly a purebred, a Jack Russell Terrier. She privately thought of it as another kind of Jack-something terrier, but didn't mention that. She and the others had been through a standard decontamination procedure, which had turned the damp patch on Jim's tunic bright blue, though the technician insisted it would return to normal color later.
It's coming out of your salary.
Jim and Bia had agreed to split the cost of the fines and vet care.
He'll be a help. He can guard the dockside, like Martin said.
Not until it's grown. And I don't think puppies that size grow into guard dogs.
Kai plugged into another link and called the ship on a secure line. Quincy answered.
We're fine, Quincy. Just had to see a man about a dog, literally. Jim found a stray puppy and had to rescue it.
I thought that was your strategy.
Not this time. We're just now leaving Hub 3 for Hub 4. I'll check in when we get there.
Wait, you've got messages. A sealed hard copy from someone named McRobert, originating at Slaughter Key, and a call from that security firm, Baratom. They said call them back.
McRobert again? How big is the package?
Small. Not too heavy. You think it's a trap or something?
No. Just put it in my cabin. I'll get to it later.
Well, Baratom really wanted you to call back.
Kai took down the number and called them.
Captain Vada, our dockside staff reported that you left the secured area. Did you not wish an escort?
Kai was about to refuse when she thought to ask Martin.
You can send Jim back. Tell him to buy some clothes on the way and have the escort meet us. I'd like a chance to assess their personnel.
Fine.
Kai turned back to the comm booth.
I'm presently at Hub 3, Second Ring, Green Sector. I'm on my way to Hub 4. If your agent meets me at the tram station...
We prefer to have the operative meet the subject at a secure location.
Kai was already behind schedule. She did not want to return to the Garda station to meet an escort. But surely Milmart counted as a secure location.
Milmart Exchange, how's that? Otherwise, it'll be after I get back to the ship some hours from now.
That will be adequate. We supply our operatives with the usual identification kits. You're not at a secured comm outlet right now.
No, I'm sure Milmart has one.
All right. We will provide you with the operative's code there.
Kai shook her head as she turned away.
What?
Just the day. Jim, you head back to the ship. You have your tram pass, right? I know Martin suggested you buy clothes on the way, but I'd rather have you safe on the ship. In fact, Martin, should Jim go back alone? Shouldn't I send Bia with him?
No, he should be fine for now. You're more likely to be attacked than he is. I'd rather have backup with us.
Remember what Martin told you, Jim. Be careful, go straight back. No more puppies, kittens, lost children, or whatever else comes into your path. Martin, their agent, will meet me at Milmart.
I'll bet it's a trick.
Nothing like your trick of getting us in trouble with the law. Go on now. I want you back on the ship by the time I call Quincy from Hub 4.
At Hub 4, the station was even plainer than that in Station 2. Gray industrial flooring, cream tile walls. When they came out into the passage, it had none of the amenities of Hub 3. Signs advertised ship stores, none, Kai was sure, with gold-eye raspberries or fancy-sliced meats, hand and power tools, parts and fittings, navigation software, navigation hardware, tech modules for cranial implants, ship suits and patches. Kai paused to call and let Quincy know they'd arrived, checked the directory display to be sure she was oriented correctly, and led the way down the passage. Here were the front offices of the yards that performed major repairs and replaced spacecraft engines or entire environmental systems. Kai had checked the locations she wanted before she left her own ship, and knew they had to work their way inward two rings and then left. Just behind the shops to their left were the warehouses of Milmart, but the access was somewhere else. She assumed it gave the Milmart surveillance ample time to collect good, clear images before someone arrived on their doorstep, or whatever they had instead. They had passed the first ring crossing and were almost to the next when Kai's eye was caught by a familiar symbol.
Here?
She looked again. A narrow storefront bore the neat legend, Mackensee Military Assistance Corporation. Your problems, our solution. She slowed. It was one of a row of storefronts, all of which appeared to be mercenary offices, between Barclays Best, Got War? Get the Best, Barclays, and Answanthia Military Advisors. Experience counts.
Now that's interesting.
What?
Martin followed their gaze.
Oh, mercenaries. Which group was it you ran into, ma'am?
Mackensee.
Martin nodded and said nothing more. Kai wondered if these Mackensees had heard about Sabine, about her. Surely they had. Surely if Vada was completely destroyed, she could always join them, as they'd offered before. She pushed that thought away. Vada would survive. She would ensure that Vada survived. The nagging question of how, she ignored for the moment. Around the corner to the left, large red letters announced the entrance to Milmart Exchange in three languages. Armed guards, not the station Garda, stood outside. A steady stream of customers went in and out.
There it is. What are you going to get, Captain?
What we can afford, which certainly won't be all I want or all we need.
The guards at the door seemed to pay no attention to her, but just inside the entrance to Milmart was a check station where Kai gave her customer ID number. She and her entourage then put on ID wristbands and a door opened that led into a room of vidscreens.
You can look at the catalog here, and if there's something you want, ring for assistance to go into the back and look at it. There are secured comm links if you need to check with your financial institution.
Kai called back to Baratom and exchanged recognition codes with the office, then told a Milmart employee that if anyone asked for ambergris, it was for her. The employee nodded with such complete boredom that Kai realized a lot of people probably made contact here in this well-lighted, well-guarded place. Then she turned to the catalog. Her first look almost made her gasp. Here were no circumlocutions. The main divisions were Ordnance, Defensive, Ordnance, Offensive, Ordnance Control Systems, defensive hardware and software, small arms, and IFF systems. Each was divided into ship-based, space, non-ship-based, and ground-based. She was partway down ordnance defensive ship-based, self-powered, when she spotted familiar names and numbers. She blinked.
Thornback missiles?
The Slaughter Key Space Force would choke if they knew their supposedly first-run ship weapons were being sold to anyone with the money out here. She scrolled through to defensive hardware and software.
Deep pilot stealthing systems?
This couldn't be surplus. Scuttlebutt at the Academy had been that funding was too short for deep pilot to be installed on all the cruisers, let alone the smaller ships. She glanced at Martin at an adjoining station. His face looked grimmer than usual. She wondered what he thought, finding his world's advanced weaponry for sale to anyone with enough credits. The catalog seemed to have something from everyone's arsenal, in fact. Items coded as FMPR in the catalog turned out to be manufactured by Farm Power on Sabine Prime. Ground-based armored vehicles and heavy equipment for preparing landing sites and fortifications. Nothing from Belinta. She had scrolled to the list of source manufacturers, but dozens of other systems had contributed their bit. She wondered if it was all stolen. But the important thing was, with enough money, you could outfit a space fleet from here. Considering those mercenaries' offices, quite possibly someone, several someones, did. Not that everyone could afford it. She blinked again at the prices, mentally calculating what she had available to spend. Not enough. Not nearly enough. She'd been taught that war was expensive. She'd memorized the estimated costs given in class. The Riandi incursion, 2.3 times as costly as the Belliconti uprising. But she'd never considered what it might take to convert one small ship from an old, slow, unarmed trader to a fast, powerful raider. All Aunt Gracie's diamonds wouldn't put a dent in her wish list.
Raider?
Kai paused, not really seeing the page of display in front of her. She had come here looking for ways to protect the ship from Vada's enemies. Her intentions had slipped sideways into something like raider. Dangerously close to pirate, that was.
Privateer.
Yes, if she had authorization from the government. But what else was there for one captain and one small vessel? Nothing she could put on the ship, even if she could afford the stealth package, the point defense missile system and its software, and a faster in-system drive, would really protect them against the kind of enemies she seemed to face. She couldn't trade effectively while evading pursuit. Good cargo ships were predictable, reliable. That's what customers paid for. On-time delivery. Guarantees of complete cargo.
Captain?
Yes, Bia?
Kai didn't look at Bia, seeing instead the narrow funnel of choices facing her. None of them good.
If I cannot use my ship as Vada has always used their ships, what can I do with it? With my crew? With that idiot puppy? Can I really become a raider and attack other ships? And what would that take in resources?
If you can give me a budget, I can prioritize upgrades on the basic functions.
That's what I'm thinking about. Maybe we should have waited until we'd sold our cargo so we'd know what our resources are. I can estimate, but this is not a place where I want to come up short.
I see that. The cargo's selling, though, isn't it?
I certainly hope so. Let me just check with the ship and see how it's going.
Kai signed on to the secure comm again and called her crew.
More offers are coming in. The only other trade ship in the past 2 weeks had a totally different cargo mix, so the market's on our side.
Good. You've got the account number for deposits.
Excuse me, Captain Vada?
That was a Milmart employee.
There's a person wishing to speak to you. He says he's from Baratom Security Services, and he gave the correct countersign.
Thanks, I'll come out. Bia, you wait here. I won't be long. Aline, go on and make the best deals you can. We want to move the Leonora consignments first. I'll be back in a few hours.
Back through the door, into the anteroom, with Martin at her heels. Baratom Security Services outfitted its agents in brown with green facings. Willem Turnish was a little taller than Kai, appeared to be middle-aged but fit, with warm brown eyes. He held out a data pack.
Captain Vada?
Yes? Your code, please?
He rattled it off, word and number both. Kai replied with hers and then inspected the data pack. Name, height, weight, thumb scan. She held it out and he pressed his thumb to the plate, which flashed green. So he was what he claimed to be. She handed the data pack back and glanced at Martin. His face conveyed no message at all.
I'll probably be another hour here. You can wait out here, or if there's a cafe nearby...
Turnish gestured to a bench along one wall.
I'll wait here.
Fine.
When Kai came back to the terminals, she turned to Martin.
Well?
He's a professional. He's armed. He has the right codes. I can't tell how competent he is from that brief encounter, but he has the look of someone with experience. I can tell more after we've been on the street with him.
Bia, if you went back to the ship now that you've seen the catalog, you could discuss with Quincy what they've got and how it might fit our hull. And you could get Aline's best guess on what our cargo might bring.
If you're sure, Captain.
Martin's with me. With the escort, that's two. Two should be enough. Besides, I'm wearing armor now, and I've got my new toy.
Kai patted the holster.
More dangerous than you look. I'll be off, then.
Kai turned back to the catalog. If she bought the defensive suite, item number 34-5000-89357, then she could just, maybe, afford the single launcher installation. Item number 68-4322-7639. But the only reason to have a launcher was to attack other ships. Other defenseless ships. A single launcher was too puny to go against real warships or better-armed pirates. She could not do it. To become a pirate, a thief, that would end Vata. Even if she herself lived, became wealthy, tried to reconstitute the organization. If Slaughter Key had turned on her family, a mystery that she could not solve here and now, they would certainly not authorize her to be a privateer. Nor did she have the resources to make a living on the run without raiding.
I would have to... To what? Admit we were all doomed? Not that either. Run? Run where? To another sector far across the spaces where Vada has traded? Back to the old worlds my family once fled? Out to the unknown worlds beyond the rift?
Kai leaned her head on her hand, refusing all those choices, and unable to think of any others. No, she had to think, and she could not think. The self she had been in the crisis at Sabine, the self who had taken quick, decisive action, seemed to have vanished, leaving a sour confusion behind. She stretched and exited the catalog to look at the information on purchase agreements. She could put items on hold with no deposit for 24 hours, or with a deposit for up to 5 days. In hard, cold, rational analysis, they needed that defensive suite in any case. In fact, they needed a better one. Item 35-4571-983324 would be ideal, but the catalog listed only one in stock. She put a hold on it, no deposit. That, at least, would give her time to think. Back to the list. If offensive ordnance was too expensive and only good for preying on others, what about defensive? Ordnance, defensive, ship. Kai looked down the list. If they had Slaughter Key ordnance, maybe they'd have... Yes. Mines. Self-powered, auto-stabilizing. Model 87-TR-5003. Top of the line as far as senior students at the academy knew. Compared to the other ordnance, mines were economical, even cheap. Nor did they take up much space. If you understood how to use them... And she had written a paper on the use of passive and active defensive systems, including mines, they could be very effective. Of course, there were a lot of complications, including the inherent instability of anything in space. Mines drifted with gravitational forces, and eventually their self-powered ability to correct their drift wore out, leaving lethal hazards scattered in unknowable locations. But Kai was willing to make the universe more hazardous for others if it would save her own ship. She put a hold on the mines, too. If she took that defensive suite, she could just barely afford 15 mines. You can't ever have too much ammunition, one of her instructors had said. Maybe some of their cargo would bring premium prices. She collected Martin, checked out of the catalog viewing area, and picked up her escort. He preceded her to the exit, and certainly seemed to be competent in his check of the passage outside. Unlike the hapless Jim, he would not be plucking puppies from waste cans. That thought reminded her of another errand.
Do you know a shop near here or on our way back to the Interhub tram that carries pet supplies?
Pet supplies?
It was an unusual question, but he didn't have to sound that amused.
Pet supplies. We have acquired a, puppy. It'll be released from quarantine tomorrow.
Let me check.
He looked momentarily blank, accessing his implant.
Bioexotics, down this way.
He gestured to a cross passage ahead of them. Above the official numbered designation, someone had added a pink and green sign with Willow Lane in curly letters.
It's lunchtime. How about a stop for something to eat?
Kai glanced at him. He'd mentioned before the security risks of public eating places. She wondered if this was part of his assessment of their escort. Kai started to refuse, but her own stomach growled.
There's a cafe on the corner.
Well, fine. A quick lunch, then.
Martin didn't say anything, and when Kai looked at him, his face was impassive. The cafe was not crowded in the post-lunch period, but the smells from the kitchen were all good. Mindful of Martin's earlier lecture, she went to a table against a wall and placed herself with the wall at her back. Martin sat on her right, facing the door squarely. Turnish flanked her, sitting across from Martin, which put his back to the door but facing the kitchen hatch. She offered Turnish a meal. He said he'd eaten before he came on duty. Even though she was paying for his time, Kai felt subtly pressured by his stolid demeanor, as if she were eating in front of an instructor. An escort shouldn't involve himself in chit-chat, true, but Turnish radiated patience at a level that felt impatient. Kai worked her way through a delicious soup and fresh-baked bread that made it clear how this cafe stayed in business. Martin, she noticed, had inhaled a thick sandwich while hardly taking his gaze off the door. Out in Willow Lane, late first shift meant almost no traffic. Turnish led the way past open shop doors in which no one appeared, a succession of small businesses, laundry and cleaners, bakery, used clothing stores, hand tool repair, sign studio. It could have been an afternoon in a small town. Kai relaxed. Yes, it would be easy for an assassin to set up on a quiet street, but any rational assassin would assume she'd head straight back to her ship. Turnish suddenly started to turn toward her.
Look out!
Kai dove for the deck, shoving Turnish aside. He fell beside her. The first two shots missed all of them by a meter. Kai glanced back at Martin. He had his weapon out and squeezed off a shot as she watched. She braced herself on her elbows and looked for her target. There, peeking out of the doorway of Andy's tailor shop ahead of them. She squeezed off one round of CPF. She saw the assailant's body jerk, withdraw, then topple slowly out into the passage. A familiar surge of satisfaction pulsed through her. No time for that. Kai looked for cover and the backup. There would be another. Whoever was doing this would not have hired a single shooter. Nothing. No one came to the door of the shop, of any shop, to look. She could feel the hair standing up on the back of her neck. A doorway to the right gaped empty, only a meter or so away. She tapped Turnish's leg with one hand, looking past him for more trouble.
Move to cover. 4 o'clock. I'll cover you.
I don't think so.
Turnish rolled over. Kai's breath stopped as she stared down the bore of his weapon.
That's really big.
Game over, Vada.
Kai could not move fast enough. Her weapon was offline, aimed at where trouble had been, not where it was. She knew she could not move fast enough, and that knowledge made it impossible to move at all. He kept smiling, clearly aware of her thoughts, of her fear, of her weapon's position. Her throat was dry. Icy sweat trickled down her spine. Martin couldn't possibly... But then the man's head exploded in a spray of blood and brains before she even saw what it was Martin was doing. Kai swiped at the mess on her face.
Martin!
Sorry, I wasn't sure until he turned on you. Get on into that doorway.
Still no alarm. The passage might have been empty. Perhaps it was. Perhaps everyone had been paid to go have a mid-shift snack or something. The dead man's weapon lay farther away than Kai expected, with his hand still on it. Martin must have fired 2 shots then. She hadn't known he was that fast. Not that it mattered now. What mattered now was getting some official help. Cautiously, she eased into the doorway she'd spotted and looked for a comport. The one in the red booth three shops down was far too exposed, but most stations had them in more discreet locations as well.
Too bad. I suppose we're in for the traditional bad quarter hour.
I hope it's only that. We've already been a problem twice today.
Yes. You'll have quite a reputation when we're done here. You're, remarkably calm for someone who just killed someone and was nearly killed herself. Is it calm, or are you in shock?
I'm supposed to know? I don't feel panicky, if that's what you mean. A little worried about the men with the uniforms.
I presume you've been told how to behave when arrested?
Oh, yes. But I'd just as soon not spend another hour face down on the floor like I did on Belinta.
On Belinta? But you were nearly killed on Belinta.
And one of the men who tried to kill me was thoroughly killed.
By?
Me. I thought you knew.
No. I heard about the mutineers on your ship. I knew this wasn't your first.
The first for this weapon.
Kai tucked it back into its holster as the first guard came into view. Martin had already holstered his. The Garda, another two, had entered from the far end, were fully armored, weapons out.
Anyone in this area, come out with your hands up!
That's us. Here we go.
Kai put her hands up and stepped out of the doorway, Martin beside her, hoping that no other sniper remained. Her skin tightened, but no one shot her.
Any more of you?
No, not on our side.
The armed guards moved in.
Armed?
Yes. Automatic, in waist holster, three rounds fired, safety's on.
One of the guards plucked it out gingerly and put it in a safe hanging from his shoulder.
Yes, shoulder holster, standard arms 11 millimeter, and the safety is on.
The guard removed this weapon and dropped it into the safe as well. He turned back to Kai.
ID.
Kailara Vada of Gary Tobai. This is my crewman, Gordon Martin.
Ah, you've had contact with the law twice already today. An altercation at your dockside, and possession of an unlicensed animal.
We found that unlicensed animal.
And I suppose you just found some dead bodies.
No. We were coming along this passage when someone started shooting at us. We hit the deck. I got that one.
Kai nodded to the body in the street, some 30 meters away.
And this one, who was assigned to me by Baratom Security. Supposedly a fully licensed escort guard. He turned on me, close range.
Excuse me?
The back of Kai's neck prickled, a signal she was in no mood to ignore.
Could we go to the station, please? Two people tried to kill me today. I'd like to get off the street and into cover.
You're scared with all of us here.
Yes, and with some reason, I believe. I am willing, no, eager, to give a full report, but I'd rather not be shot in the head while standing out here in easy range of anyone in any of these shops.
The man made no response at first. Kai assumed he was getting instructions through an implant or his helmet comm.
All right. We're taking you in. Hands on your head.
The Garda station was around the curve from where they'd been, in the direction they'd been walking. No one else appeared until they were out of sight of the carnage behind. There, a curious crowd had gathered behind a taped perimeter. The guards answered no questions, but hurried Kai and Martin on until they were inside the station. There, since nothing had shown on the autoscanner as they came in, they were allowed to lower their hands.
You're getting quite a reputation, Captain Vada. Illegal biologicals, assaults, murder.
Self-defense. Attempted murder on their part. And what I hope is impersonation for which Baratom is legally responsible.
Yeah, so you say. An investigating officer will be here shortly to take his statements. You can wait in there.
He jerked his head toward a doorway.
I need to inform my ship. They're expecting us to return.
You're under suspicion.
Of course. But there's no reason to panic my crew, is there? After all, I'm still responsible for them. I'm sure you'd rather not have them involved in any other incidents.
You can use the public comm outlet. There.
Go on, Martin. I'll be with you shortly.
Martin nodded and preceded one of the Garda down a hall. Kai gave the ship's code.
Gary Tobai, cargo specialist Baracall speaking.
Seeley looked calm, so Kai hoped that meant nothing had happened while she was gone.
Oh, Captain! Sorry, the screen didn't show your ID at first.
That's all right. Is Quincy there? Has Bia come back?
No, Captain. Quincy's gone out to one of the Chandlers to select rations. She's not alone. She took Jim with her. Bia called in to say he was having lunch on Hub 3. Do you want Mihar? She's in engineering.
No, that's all right. But I've run into some problems. We were attacked on the way back from out here. I want all ship personnel to return to the ship at once and stay there. Who else is out?
Besides you and Martin, just Jim, Bia, and Quincy, Captain. Are you all right?
I'm fine. But I'd like you to contact Quincy and Bia. Get Mihar to do it by implant, and have them return immediately. I'll be tied up here in the Hub 4 Garda station a while, probably some hours, but she can try to contact me here. I don't know if they'll put calls through. Just sit tight.
Yes, Captain. I do have some good news on the cargo side. Aline got quite a profit on one part of the Leonora cargo.
Oh, that's fine, but I'd rather not discuss that on this line. I'm using the public comm at the guard station. I'll call again when I can.
Yes, Captain.
Kai signed off, smiled at the still scowling man behind the desk, and went into the waiting room, furnished with a bench, narrow table, and two chairs. Martin sat on the bench with his usual composure, radiating calm patience despite the smears of blood and dirt on his clothes. He gave her a pleasant smile. Kai was sure she looked worse than he did. The stench of blood and brains on her face was nauseating. One of the armed guards followed them and stood by the door.
Is there a toilet?
You have to wait until forensics has tested your clothes.
They didn't have long to wait. The man who came through the door introduced himself as Inspector Grant.
We'll need to do some forensic tests on your clothes. If you'll follow my assistant here into the changing area, this won't take long, and then I can take your statements.
He had two assistants, one male and one female, both humods with low-pressure adaptations. Kai disrobed under the eye of the female and handed her suit over, changing into the simple gray coverall provided.
Now we'll need to test your hands.
The woman took the sack with Kai's clothes and led her to another room, where a technician sat behind a machine with a slot in the front. Kai put her hands in the slot as directed, and after a minute or two, the technician nodded. The technician wiped her face with a cloth and took a blood sample. Then the woman led her back to the waiting room, having handed over the sack to the technician.
If you need the toilet, you can use it now.
I'd like to wash my face. Is that all right?
Sure.
In the washroom, Kai scrubbed all the visible bits off her face and wished she could wash her hair. Even as she brushed it with the packet of dry wash, it didn't feel clean. What she really needed was a long, hot shower. She used the facilities, then scrubbed her hands again. When she emerged, she went back to the waiting room and sat down across from Inspector Grant.
You've had a bad day, I gather. So, Captain Vada, suppose you tell me what happened, starting with... let's start with when you left the Garda station on Hub 3 after arranging for that animal to go into quarantine.
Kai related her travels as best she could. Grant asked for descriptions of the people on the various trams.
Why did you elect to walk back that way? Didn't it occur to you that staying in the main thoroughfare might be safer?
My escort, Willem Turnish. I had asked if he knew of a place that carried pet supplies. If we were going to be stuck with that puppy, we'd need some. He said there was a shop called Bio Exotics on Willow Lane. In fact, he recommended the cafe, Murphy's, where we ate lunch.
Murphy's has a good reputation. You think they'll remember you?
I'd think so. It wasn't very busy when we were there. I remember which table. Anyway, we started down Willow Lane, and the passage cleared out after a while. We were walking along fairly quickly, and I was looking at storefronts, reading the names and numbers. Then Turnish said, "Look out!" And I was diving for cover when the first two shots came. We were all on the ground when Martin fired, then I had my weapon out. I got the one up ahead and told Turnish to take cover in the nearest doorway while I covered him.
And?
He rolled over and had a weapon aimed at my head. I was so stunned I couldn't move. He was too close, and I was stretched out, my weapon pointing away from him.
You're sure it was Turnish?
Absolutely. He'd been with me the whole time, never more than an arm's length away.
So what happened then?
Well, next thing I knew, Martin bobbed up and shot him. I don't suppose Turnish knew he could move that fast. Then we got into that doorway and waited until the guards showed up.
You have a license for your weapon. They checked that at the other guard station. But your crewman, Do you know if he has a concealed carry permit?
Yes. I arranged for that when I purchased mine, along with my weapon at Blades on Hub 3.
And you were both wearing torso armor.
Yes. Also purchased today at Blades. We had some reason to expect trouble, as I'm sure you know. But my real concern is that someone I hired from a bonded protection company tried to kill me. He had all the right recognition codes, the ones the company provided to me. Does this mean the company is bent, or are they missing a legitimate agent?
I assure you we'll investigate that aspect. They say they did dispatch an escort named Willem Ternish, but we don't yet know if the dead man really was Ternish. Do you know why he warned you? If he was part of the plan to kill you, that doesn't make sense.
I don't know.
Unless he set it up so it could look like someone else shot you. Though that seems complicated. Tell me how he came to you. Had you arranged for an escort with Baratom?
They contacted my ship. A message was relayed to me, and I called the number provided. They said their dockside personnel had noticed I went out and asked if I wanted an escort. It was something I'd mentioned to them before. Why?
I don't know yet. Just trying to understand what exactly happened. Preliminary forensics confirms that the individual in the doorway of Andy's fired the three rounds we found on site, and that those rounds were fired before the ones that killed him.
How else, Kai wondered, but didn't say.
Forensics cannot confirm that the individual known to you as Willem Ternish was in fact menacing you with his weapon before your crewman shot him. We're experiencing difficulty in obtaining uncorrupted vid surveillance data from that area. Looks as if someone intended to insert a very different scenario, but we tapped into the system too quickly.
Grant's smile now was predatory.
We are not happy to find that someone is attempting to corrupt our surveillance.
That would be very bad.
Yes. At any rate, the evidence at this point does not support holding you in custody, even though you might be safer here than out on the streets. Though it's clear from both your stories that your crewman Martin shot and killed this Ternish fellow, the previous threats against your family suggest it's not that unlikely he was trying to kill you. Therefore, I'm willing to release him as well into your custody. Excuse me a moment.
He left the room. Kai leaned back. The gray jumpsuit smelled of harsh institutional soap, but she could still smell something in her hair. She would have to get in touch with Baratom, and she wondered if they would blame her for the death of their operative or accept that he had turned on her. She ached all over. She did not want to hike over to the station to take the tram back to Hub 2. Grant came back.
Since it's clear you're the target of malicious intent, I'm authorizing the use of a patrol scooter to get you back to your docking area. We can't provide around-the-clock protection. We don't have the personnel, but that much we can do.
Thank you.
Your clothes and weapons will be returned to you at dockside.
Everyone was back at Vada dockside when Kai and Martin returned. Kai brushed off the concerned questions.
We both need to clean up, and I need some sleep. I'm hoping the ship unit will restore this suit.
She didn't think it would, but it was worth trying. After she put her filthy, stained clothes in the fresher, she took a long hot shower and fell into bed. She lay still, breathed deeply, and didn't go to sleep. She tried meditation, attempted to visualize the rainbow, but all she could see was the blank black circle of the gun muzzle pointing at her face and the red blood. All she could feel was the shock of fear and despair, the elation of killing, side by side and overlapping. Again and again she tried to work her way through the color sequence, the calming words, and each time, the black circle and red spatters dominated her thoughts. Finally, she emerged from her cabin, still tired, aching, sore where her elbows and knees had hit the pavement, but too alert, too tense. It would almost be better if her father was dead, because then he would never know that his daughter, his precious little girl, got a charge out of killing people. True, they had been trying to kill her, all the ones she had killed. But they were still people, and Sephiric Cyclans considered killing people as primal dissonance. Her failure to visualize the cycle proved they were right, at least as far as the use of that guided meditation went.
Jim's sleeping. And we've got these for him.
Standard spacer shore rig for those not fashion conscious. Blue trousers and a belted tunic in shades of tan with brown trim on sleeves and neck that would pass unnoticed on every station in the quadrant.
Kind of dull, but we thought just not wearing dull green would be a shock.
Good idea.
Are you all right, Captain?
I'm fine. Well, I have bruised elbows, but it's not serious.
With a wave, Kai headed up ship. On the bridge, Cheryl sat watch. She looked as tense as Kai felt.
I won't have to go out for anything, will I?
No, of course not.
Good. Lee half wants to, I think. He thinks all this is exciting.
You don't.
No. I know I'm the only navigator you've got, Captain, and I like you, but if I weren't scared to set foot off the ship, I'd ask to separate. I just want a nice safe berth on a nice safe ship.
Some people just were not cut out for adventure. Kai wondered why she herself was.
Cheryl, if there's another ship here that needs a navigator, or whose navigator wants some excitement, I'd say take the chance. But I'm not sure there are going to be many nice, safe ships for a while now. Sure, Vada's being attacked at the moment, but there are other wealthy cargo lines out there, and unless we find out who's doing this and stop them, everyone's at risk.
I suppose. My stomach gets all knotted up and I can't sleep.
I know the feeling.
Yes, but you are actually doing things. People have tried to kill you. I haven't been hurt at all yet, and I'm this scared. I'm just sitting here.
That could be fixed.
Cheryl, sitting here alone will just make it worse. So I'm relieving you of bridge duty, starting now. Just a second.
Kai called the other sections and found that Aline could indeed use more help with cargo shifting.
You're now a cargo handler. Not dockside, just shifting things inside the ship. No more risk than up here, and you'll be busy and with others.
For an instant, Cheryl looked annoyed. A navigator doing physical work? Then she smiled.
Maybe that will keep my mind off it.
Hope so. Now, scat, I need to make some calls.
What she'd told Cheryl was perfectly true. Once the attackers finished mopping up Vada resources, they would turn on others. If she could get some support from other traders, or even information, she would no longer be fighting this war alone. 16 interstellar ships, besides her own, were docked at Lastway at the moment. 3 were corporate. Pavrati's Emerald Sky, she wasn't going to try to talk with them. Mellon and Company's Sunburst. She didn't know much about Mellon and Company, except that they traded into the next quadrant. Outbound's Ringwalker. Outbound typically hauled supplies for startups, the basics for terraforming and initial colony construction. The rest were listed as independents, from a huge bulk carrier, Orlando Song, to Little Lacewing, with even less cubage, but better engines, than Gary Tobai. Kai started at the head of the list, excluding Pavrati, and worked her way down in the order given. When she got through to Sunburst, her call was transferred to Captain Sunder.
This is Captain Vada. I'm wondering if you have any information about these attacks on trading vessels?
On Vada vessels?
On screen, he was clearly a Humod, though she didn't recognize the function of some of his physical characteristics. Why the sagittal ridge, for instance? The large bulge on his left forearm? And were those functional gills on his neck?
I have heard nothing about attacks on other registrations.
That's reassuring for now. But I presume that when whoever it is finishes with Vada, they will start on someone else. Do you have any concerns about that?
If I did, I would not share them with you. Your luck is down. I do not want to be contaminated.
Well, thank you very much.
With minor variations, this was the response she got from all of them. They all worried. They all recognized that whoever was attacking Vada might shift to another target. None of them thought allying with Vada would improve their chances. Nor were they making any effort to cooperate with each other. At least, none they would admit to a pariah like her.
Short-sighted idiots. They'll end up in my fix soon enough if they don't start thinking ahead.
Lee came onto the bridge.
Talking to yourself? Where's Cheryl?
I sent her down to work cargo. She was getting twitchy up here by herself.
Well, if you want privacy, I can go fix us something to eat. It's my turn for galley duty anyway.
Good idea. Though I don't know what I need privacy for, since none of the other captains will talk to me about the situation. Some offer sympathy, at least, but they're afraid we'll infect them with our bad luck.
Well, you could try telling them that you are the very embodiment of good luck. I mean, look how many attempts on your life you've survived.
I don't think that's the sort of good luck they'd appreciate. But in any case, yes, I'm hungry.
In a few minutes, he returned with a tray for her.
Quincy said to remind you about that package, the one that came while you were out. She put it in your cabin. Did you see it?
No. I'll look at it after I eat.
Hunger beat curiosity for the moment. She worked her way through a bowl of Lee's spicy meat and vegetable concoction, then went down the passage and retrieved the package. She recognized MacRobert's handwriting.
Probably another spaceship model. What'll this one have as a surprise?
She took a bite of the custard Lee had brought for dessert before she put her thumb on the integral scanner. The top layer of wrapping opened along a flat seam and rolled back. Underneath was another layer of wrapping. She opened that and found a thick padded folder with the seal of the Slaughter Key Diplomatic Service embossed on it, instead of the box of model spaceship parts she expected. Kai ran her fingers over the seal, then opened it. Behind a clear plastic protective cover lay a document with the state seal at the top and blocks of dense printing. She started reading.
What?
It couldn't be what it looked like. She put it down and rummaged in the depths of the package. An envelope with a letter from MacRobert.
No, this isn't another spaceship model. Your family said you'd show up at Last Way eventually, so this was sent by hand to a trusted local agent. Trouble's brewing. Don't know how bad it is, but there's things you need to know. First off, Space Force is only a small part of Slaughter Key Space Defense. The other part is contracted out to private concerns, what you'd call privateers. Your actions at Sabine show that you have, as I always thought, the right mix of attitude and ability.
So, fine. MacRobert suspected she was a killer at heart. Then her mind really registered privateer. Pirates in traitor's clothing, as one of her instructors had called them. Was MacRobert trolling through the cadets at Space Force Academy looking for potential pirates?
You were always a bit too independent for Space Force. That fancy folder from the Diplomatic Service is a letter of marque, authorizing you to act on behalf of Slaughter Key to do harm to our enemies, to attack and seize ships and cargo, at your discretion and using your own best judgment. You're supposed to keep the letter handy to show when called for. You'll notice that it could be mounted on your bulkhead with the handy bracket on the back of the frame. It's not worth the antique materials it's written on when it comes to stopping return fire, and it's recognized as a legitimate charter or commission only in the jurisdictions listed at the bottom. Be sure to read that, or you could get interned in a very boring jail somewhere. You won't be able to do much in your little tub, so I suggest you get yourself a better ship as soon as you can. In the meantime, be sure you order galley supplies from Bukert Brothers and specify the following under odor barriers. Maskem 315-2337, 6 units. Someone will call and ask if that is a correct code. You'll say yes. When the delivery arrives, be sure to open that container in a secure location. You'll recognize the contents. Right now, that's all the help we can give you. You'll want to know who Slaughter Key's enemies are. I can't tell you that right now. We know something's wrong at ISC, more than what happened at Sabine, and there are other indications that something big is coming. Use your best judgment. The Commandant sends his respects.
Kai looked back at the letter. In archaic and complicated language, it authorized her, Kailara Evangeline Dominique Vada, to seek out and impede, harass, annoy, frustrate, confiscate, attack, and destroy any and all enemies of Slaughter Key, wheresoever she might find them, in space or in dock, by any means whatsoever that lay within her power, and further instructed officers of Slaughter Key, diplomatic, military, and affiliated, whatever that was, to assist her in these endeavors. Along with stunned astonishment, she was aware of feelings she could not entirely approve. Excitement, anticipation, glee.
What's that?
It's interesting.
She hesitated to tell Lee, but only for a moment. In the unlikely event she ever used it, she'd need a pilot.
Our government wants me to turn pirate.
What?
Well, privateer, actually. This is a letter of marque. We studied this kind of thing in school. I had no idea anyone actually did this. Now, not centuries ago somewhere else, it's licensed to do just about anything.
To anyone?
No, to the enemies of Slaughter Key, which this other letter states they can't identify at the moment. It must have been sent...
She looked again at the letter and its date.
Yes, before the attacks on Vada started, and before we became persona non grata to the Slaughter Key government. Which may make this null and void, though I don't know.
Only if they formally rescind it, I'd think. Not that I'm an expert either, but surely they'd have to give you notice.
And they can't, because their ansibles blocked.
To her surprise, Lee looked more excited than afraid.
We aren't exactly privateer material, though, are we? Did they send you money for a better ship?
Not unless it's hidden in the deodorant I'm supposed to order from a grocer. Why? Do you like the idea?
So, are you going to do it?
I'm going to see what's in the deodorant anyway. For the rest, I don't know.
If we had the right ship, it could be fun.
Her earlier objections to turning pirate came to mind, but she didn't see much choice now. At her look, Lee pulled his face into a frown.
Difficult and dangerous, I know. Not fun in the usual sense, but more fun than just driving a trade ship back and forth.
You were wasted in commercial shipping.
You too, Captain.
I don't know. Not being shot at for weeks at a time is beginning to look better and better.
Nah, you'd get tired of it.
Maybe. Cheryl and Aline and Ted wouldn't. They hate the excitement, as you call it.
Well, maybe they'll find another ship. If any ship is safe.
Kai looked up Bukert Brothers in the directory. Restaurant and ship supply. Variety and quality at a reasonable price.
That's what they all say.
The list of products looked normal. Bulk and packaged staples, brand name and private label goods, everything from cleaning supplies to fresh tank-grown fish, alive until harvested. She compared prices with two other suppliers. About the same. A quick look at their supply situation. She entered an order for cleaning supplies, protein powder in 5-kilogram containers, a dozen sets of assorted processor flavors, a set of oven trays, and the specified odor barriers. A few hours later, uncrating the order in the cargo hold, Kai found herself staring at a shape she knew very well. Here was the other, and more expensive, version of the mines she had put a hold on. Smaller, a little lighter, these contained the most sophisticated electronic attack available. Properly set and delivered, they could disable an entire ship's systems without causing significant structural damage. An excellent choice for piracy, privateering, and she now had six of them.
My, my, my. Someone likes you.
They did, but I think they don't now.
Care to explain?
A letter of marque. The package came while we were otherwise occupied, though at the moment I can't recall if it was the puppy or the assassins. Anyway, it was signed and authorized well before the attacks on Vada and before the government chose to ignore us.
Very handy.
Kai closed the crate again.
Put this where we can get at it quickly, Aline. We're going to need it once we're back out there.
What is it?
Something I'll tell you all about once we're in a secure location.
Six mines. And she had 15 with conventional explosives on hold at Milmart. As soon as she had enough money in the account, she'd put a deposit on them. Toby Randolph Lee Vada slouched on the hard bunk in the cell. He hadn't done anything wrong, but here he was in jail, without any way to communicate to the family, and no explanation why he couldn't call them.
Here you are. Lunchtime.
This was the nicest guard. Toby thought he looked like he'd be a good older brother or father or something, for someone who wasn't a prisoner.
Thanks.
You aren't hungry again?
Not really.
Thinking about your family?
Yes.
Toby couldn't help it. Ellis Fabry, blown up in dock, with casualties in the thousands because it had taken out a whole sector. Half the crew was Vada-born, from captain to cargo master. and Toby hadn't been aboard to be killed because he had been rewarded for his spit-clean record the first 6 months of his apprentice voyage. His cousin Dex, the captain, had let him off the ship to run a simple errand. Take this message over to the bank, bring back the return message, don't dawdle on the way, act like a grown-up. So he'd been four sectors away, cooling his heels in the bank manager's waiting room, when the ship blew and the chair shuddered beneath him, and all the intersection seals locked down, when his implant had stabbed him with the burst of static. Sole survivor, so far as they knew. Underaged, potential target of assassins. The guard sat down on the other end of Toby's bunk.
Nobody likes jail, but it's for your own safety.
They had explained that before, as if Toby was too stupid to understand the first time. He understood. He just could not figure out a way to deal with it. In all his life, he had never been alone among strangers, completely separated from his family or friends.
I know you're doing your best. I just don't get hungry. I'm not exercising enough, I guess.
You're losing weight. We don't want you to fade away by the time some family shows up.
They're coming?
I'm sure they will.
But you don't know.
No. Look, son, communications are down everywhere. We sent word. We don't know if it got through before the Ansibles quit working. ISC will fix them eventually, and then someone will come. We just don't know when. Allray's a little off the main lines.
Allray had seemed exotic once. Allray Station had a live display of its indigenous life forms, the smaller ones. Toby had seen the online pictures. He wanted to see a Hextan and a Hexbear in real life. Dex had promised him a free afternoon, if all went well. And Anders in engineering had promised to take him to Allray's open market, as well as the lifeforms display. Now, all he saw of Allray was this cell and the rooms visible from it. He had a vid set up, and the guards brought him entertainment cubes, but they wouldn't give him a live outside data line. There were only so many hours of the day he could stand to watch episodes of Lang's Gang, Beyond the Law, Ghost Ships. He'd never noticed before, but now every explosion, battle, and fight reminded him of his loss. He didn't complain. He'd asked about student programs, hoping to bury himself in math homework problems, but it turned out that he was several levels beyond the highest they kept on station. His big sister Erin had always told him he was too smart for his own good, but he hadn't imagined the result of racing through his schoolwork would be boredom in a jail cell when he'd done nothing wrong.
Forensics through with their... remains. Do you know what they'd want?
Toby hadn't ever thought, in his darkest adolescent humors, that he'd have to arrange the funerals of his family and other shipmates. He shook his head.
You don't have any religion or anything?
The family altar back home, and the deities he'd been taught to name, now seemed as meaningless as a plastic cube. What good had it done Cousin Dex to adhere to the standards of ethics? What good had it done Hallie and Prin and Via to observe the days of silence? They were dead. Dead for no reason but malice. And no god they prayed to had kept them safe. He could not explain this to the guard, however friendly. He shrugged instead, blinking back tears. The guard stood up.
I guess we can keep him in the freezer a while longer. Son, you're gonna have to talk sometime to someone. Are you sure there's nothing more we can do to help? We're not your enemies, you know.
I know.
The guard left. The smell of food permeated the cell. It made him sick. Yet his hunger gnawed at him. Two bites of bread and he wanted to throw up. He lay back on the bunk, covered his face with his arm. When the guard came back to remove the tray, Toby had curled to face the wall, with the blanket pulled over his head. Stella Maria Celeste Vata Constantine looked around Allray with wary interest. Thanks to the mess that had made her the laughingstock of the family and the bad example held up to youngsters, she had never taken the usual apprentice voyage off-planet. She had traveled, of course, but when she was older, and always with a mission in view. Alray might have looked exotic when she was 14, but not now, at 30. It looked scuffed and tawdry instead. She was too old to mistake scuffed and tawdry for exotic. Traveling under her married name, as she was, she raised no comment in the customs line. It was one of the things she enjoyed about traveling. No one associated the given name Stella with an idiot stupid enough to give family access codes to her first lover. The captain of the ISC Courier had given her the bad news about Ellis Fabry as soon as they down-jumped into Alray space, but he had no details. Stella's own implant did not have a complete crew list. The Ellis had changed out crew at the beginning of the standard year, and the old list would not be accurate. She made her way to the station police. They would surely know who had been killed on the ship.
You're a relative?
I need to speak to the officer in charge. I carry credentials from the family, permission to arrange for disposition of remains.
But what about the boy?
Boy?
The kid. Someone needs to take him.
Stella rummaged rapidly through her implants file of Vata younglings.
I was not informed of any boy. How old is he?
He's 14. The only one left. Toby says his name is. I guess if you're the family's representative, you'll have to take him.
All she needed was a 14-year-old boy tagging along on this mission. She couldn't say that, though. Not to a desk clerk.
Your officer in charge?
Right. I'll get him.